Good morning.
Good morning.
I'm going to start off with a pop quiz. Can someone just name me two health effects that are related to violence? Specifically, violence against women. Two health effects. Okay, that's what. That's for transmitted diseases.
Depression.
Sleep disorder.
Brain trauma.
What about stroke?
Broken
brain
trauma.
Okay, great. Oh, smart crowd. I'm trying to figure out what I'm working with. Can someone name me two? I don't know what the thing is with two this morning. It's all about two. two HHS agencies besides ACS and CDC. Oh, good. Usually happens is by the time you know about the award, it's about to close.
So how do I get on the ground floor when I see some nods? When really, by the time I got this, it was 2 weeks of the deadline. They want 25 pages. I have to have 7 MOUs. You know, what am I going to do? And really what it means is that sometimes you can't. Sometimes you just happen, you weren't on the right meeting. You know, somebody, and most times when I hear about people that have heard about an office and find out, well, how did you know about this? Oh, well, I knew my cousin's sister. I mean, it's really like that. And for our little office, it's not surprising, but it seems to also be the case with the larger offices like ACF and CDC. A lot of times we think about their funding, it is to the domestic shelters. You know, it's very specific, it's very narrow. So what we try to do is also create opportunities that other organizations can work together. So in almost in getting on the ground floor, getting into a sidebar, a window, that's I, identify innovative approaches to create change. And basically find out the organizations that got funding. Every website, every federal agency that I listed has to have somewhere where they say who they're funding. Once you figure out who's funding in your area, call them. Talk to them. Figure out how can you get involved with what they're doing now. Because what that does is set you up to show how you've already started collaborating. Because a lot of times what we do get, again, I told you, I'm in this funding mode. An organization says, oh, we're funding, we have 5 partners. And when you start to, you know, read the second sentence, you don't see any evidence of their true partnerships or true collaboration. What you see is they partnered around an event, which is really great. But did that really carry out a work or implementation function? You know? Does that make sense? And please feel free to stop. This is definitely, I want to hear questions. I see nods, so maybe I'm saying some right things. But we really want to see that you all have a history of working together. And a history doesn't mean 25 years. It just means we did a program together. Here are our substantial shared outcomes. It's really good. And I'm sure most of you do that kind of work all the time. You call your buddy at Peace Over Violence and say, hey, I have this. I'm referring these clients here and there. Those are stable, sustainable collaborations. We're not asking you, I don't think I'm necessarily asking any organization to do things so much differently. But sometimes I'm asking you to highlight what you do in a different way. Because I'm sure how many of you that do direct services, again, work with women that are depressed? Right. How many of you have highlighted the fact that you address or you help to address and provide interventions for depressed women? I mean, you know, just thinking about just like that, there's a whole agency, the Substance Abuse and Mental Health Agency, Administration, I'm sorry, no longer agency, that deals with mental health, which is what? Depression is an example of mental health. So you want to make real linkages. It's not about doing different things, but sometimes it's about presenting the work you do in a different light. Find ways to collaborate and compromise. Okay, let's talk about this. Okay. So let me give you first an example of what's not collaboration and compromise. Calling the project officer to say, the person you funded that said it was my partner hasn't paid me. You're laughing, but I've gotten at least... This year alone has been a highlight for that year, and I'm sure, and it's funny because it's actually been California. I won't say who or where or how, but I've gotten probably more calls and emails from folks here, and I know the funding issues that you all have had as far as it relates to life. But one way to think about it is that if you're collaborating, most times when we think about collaboration, we think about, I'm going to do this part. I'm going to get the women. You know, organization B is going to provide this service to the woman. Organization C is going to provide that service to a woman, which is really great. Everybody has their own little silo, and we put our hands out and we're working together. Well, sometimes if you want to have a true collaboration, it involves compromise, which means understanding and maybe sometimes changing a little bit, not of our mission, not of our goal, but of our approach to do things to really have a true collaboration and true integrated service. Because what happens is, and I'm giving you the kind of end result and kind of working my way through, what happens is when I get the call that says, I'm supposed to be working with organization B, I haven't heard from them, they haven't paid me. What I end up finding out when I do a little investigation is that you all signed the MOU, you all came in saying you were going to work together. But beyond that, there hadn't been any really true communication. Because, again, I am organization A, you're organization B. All I need to know is what time are the women going to show up at my place to do my job. So when you have a true collaboration, the way we like to think about it, it means that there are some things about how you do things. You're not just waiting for your time in the lineup to provide a service. It's that you thought about it before when you were writing the proposal to think about, okay, no, I know I only provide this service, and I only have these, my other little arms, my other little, but maybe I have to change a little bit how I think about this. that when a woman comes to me from peace over balance, she may have some other things that I can't address. But I know some other people that can address that. Does that make sense? I know it's a kind of convoluted example. I'm thinking, who can that be? I'm trying to think of a better, realistic example. I got a great one. You are a resource center. You're educational. Like, you provide the best literature in this side of L.A. for violence prevention. You have the cutest little cards that are all over the place. They're very appropriate. Then you partner with someone, let's say, that is an organization that's targeted to one ethnic group or one community of color. And so what you say is, okay, well, I'm the science base. I have the research. I create this great information. Then the organization says, well, I know the community. I know the women. I know what they want. And instead of the two organizations really getting together and learning not just how I can write this so that the women of this cultural group understand it, but so that they will use it. That's a little bit different. Usually we think, if she and I just talk to my two organizations, we've done enough. But sometimes we have to meet the other's clients. We have to really have an ongoing relationship, weekly conference calls, maybe not weekly, monthly, we're a little busy for weekly, but really things that show that you have a relationship. I mean, that's what it's really about. When we talk about these ways to collaborate and compromise, it's real relationships. It's people that are not just in your Rolodex to call, but you probably know their phone number off the top of your head. And those things come through because in the end, when there's a problem, it was a breakdown in communication because no real communication had been established. Take time to measure. I know it's a dreaded word, evaluation, evidence-based. And actually, don't be afraid of it. Don't be afraid to think about the fact that you have to count who comes through your door. You know, I mean, that's just the simplest thing, is that we have to know that we're asked many more questions about how far do our dollars reach, because they're less dollars. And sometimes you get more dollars, but unless you can show that your dollar, more dollars are reaching more people, then we're deemed ineffective. Show how your organization has a stance. A lot of times, there's usually a piece, and if you haven't seen it, I promise you over the next 7 years, you'll see it more. Sustainability. Well, you'll have to write to the sustainability of your organization. Sustainability is not we've lasted 20 years. Sustainability is telling us how you lasted for 20 years. It's talking about, you know, and not, you don't have to necessarily use 7 pages, but talking about the fact that, you know, we're very involved with our congressmen. We've gotten some local policy changes. We've got the community come around us when our doors want to shut to give this much in donation. All of those things go towards talking about your sustainability. Another quick answer that I've seen just recently, sustainability is not, we're going to get more funds from your office. I
realistically, what kind of funding is available to new organizations that don't have a history?
Right. Realistically, there have actually been probably with healthcare reform, even within our office, a lot more opportunities. And actually, it's funny that you're asking that question because this year I probably got that question more than ever from people calling that had a question about FOAs and saying, well, we just want to know, is this really open to the public? And actually, in all my years, I had never had that as much as I've had it before, that I guess funding organizations create announcements that are particularly for certain organizations, as opposed to really being open to the world. So, at our office, in Office of Women's Health, we really try to have, if we have something that's competitive, we really want it to be competitive. And we really want it to be open to new organizations that have a sound idea. Your organizational qualifications are only one part of an entire application. Usually anywhere from 10 to 24, depending upon what the focus of the project is. So it's just kind of sometimes asking that question, because that also alerts the funding office to say, we may have a reputation for, or other organizations that are close to you have a reputation for favoring certain organizations. But we don't want to be appear to have favoritism. Does that answer your question?
Mm-hmm. On this last one, I always think of sustainability as how are you going to sustain the innovative approach in the future?
Mm-hmm.
But it sounds like you're talking about how have you sustained your agency in the past.
Right. It's a combination. Because you can give me a great approach to say, oh, we have this great way, we're going to keep our program going, we're going to get everybody in the city of Los Angeles to get $5 to make sure this goes. Well, you haven't done that. How realistic is it? So it's a balance. It's showing this is how we've been able to sustain other projects from other funding or something that we created ourselves, and this is how we approach to utilize what we've learned from something new.
Okay.
any other questions about this or anything else? And again, this is just kind of, I'm sure if you talk to seven different funders, you may get seven different things. But what I can really tell you right now is all about innovation. And innovation, again, doesn't mean something new. It can just mean presenting what you do in a new way. You know, we're not, because we found out some things that worked. And I found really people do, we all do, sometimes a very poor job. I also just found that out. I also told myself, in the past, we did a very poor job of telling people who we were and what we did. So it's the same thing you want to think about when you're writing these proposals. That this, whoever's reading this doesn't know who I am. They don't know what I do. They don't know the buzzwords. I mean, that's something the congressman says, and I don't want to disagree with her, but the reviewers that I've had over the last 2 weeks, they are so sick of buzzwords, and I gave them the hint about the grant writers. Because it's in bold doesn't mean it's really there. Bold print is a tactic. you know, we've kind of really moved beyond. I'm sorry, I thought that. So, yeah, I mean, that's like, you know, when I train my reviewers, I say bold printing and putting in bold print is a writing tactic. It doesn't mean the information is there. People, and I mean, I've been surprised the level of thoroughness and just real reading that's going on. I mean, 10 years ago, I definitely sat on panels where you could tell people read the first, like you said, the first five sentences. They looked for the bold words. Oh, this was a great application. They had all the buzzwords. Now people want to know, well, what does this mean if they're not quite familiar with that term? So you want to be clear, you want to be concise, and you want to be accurate. Have the same information in every section of your project. If in section A you call your project ISITA, but in project C, in section C you call it Project Nowhere, they notice those things. And they think about the fact that what was the thought that went into this. And I know sometimes, again, when we're in that rush, those things happen, but going back over that application with the fine-tooth comb at the end, very important. Not sending the wrong draft proposal. I mean, these are real life things that affect, you know, what you put forward. I'm sorry. And Sally actually stole my little thunder, because I was actually going to show how the Office of Women's Health has really increased their financial commitment. The Office of Women's Health has long had a history of supporting and working in the arena of violence against women. But we started to make a financial commitment. We now have about 1% of our appropriated funds directed towards violence against women activities. But to continue that, you have to do what the congressman said, is help people like Sally, your other policymakers that you know, to ensure these things are done. How we jumped from $800,000, $900,000 to $2.4 million is that someone really, really pushed their congressperson really hard. And they wrote a handwritten note on our appropriations page, increase Office on Women's Domestic and Dating Violence Initiative, $1.5 million. I mean, it just like that. So, I mean, it really does help. Okay, so this is just a quick view. And I actually really, I'll give this list of programs because you want to know some dates that I have here. But after that, I'm going to open the floor just for questions. Okay? So right now, one of our premier programs is the AIDS-related services for survivors of domestic violence. We really try to focus on innovative approaches to looking at how we help women to not just deal with the issue of violence, but the fact that violence pervades every part of their life. Even ways that sometimes we may not feel comfortable talking about. There's sexual risks that are involved. Project Connect, that's a coordinated public health initiative to prevent violence against women. It's a new initiative that we just started with the Family Violence Prevention Fund. It's 2 years. They actually gave about 80% of their funds out to states. There are 10 states that are appropriate.
I mean, sorry.
No problem. 10 states that are working with us. Two in California, which are tribes. So we're pretty in it for slides. Specifically later on, I think the slides. Maybe about 19 that actually list specific states and organizations that are working on that project.
Alicia, while you're going to can you talk about how the funding is allocated underneath? Were they competitive or
yes.
Can you kind of mention that?
Yes, okay. Rob, so I'll take slides come early. So the AIDS-related services is a competitive, and actually the way that we've approached that was a unique approach. It's a project that I inherited and have been able to reshape. We do it through a contract mechanism. So they're actually awarded to small businesses that focus on training and capacity building. Because our thought is that we want them to be the link between the DV side and the HIV/AIDS side. And not that they're just the link, again, that person in the middle, but they help the two organizations start to overlay. We don't want to ask DV providers to start doing HIV/AIDS work. And we don't want HIV/AIDS providers to do DV work. But we want both, especially the HIV providers, to be sensitive to the woman that's sitting in front of them. And if this is my other hat I wear, I'm a violence team leader, but I'm also an HIV/AIDS person. It's the fact that in HIV/AIDS, use a condom. Use a condom. Okay, if I'm talking to a woman that is a survivor or currently in a relationship, you, what's going to happen if they say, baby, I want you to use a condom tonight? Right. I mean, you know, and so we've had to take a lot of time in really building up and helping HIV survivors to realize when I, and the thing, I'll actually cut myself off and tell a quick anecdotal story down in Florida. The proudest moment to know that this program was working when I was talking with some HIV service providers, and they said, you know, this made me realize that I had some clients before that would tell me, again, just their regular clients, that, you know, they really couldn't use a condom, and I would just beat over the head of me using a condom. And what I learned through this is I need to ask a few more questions to figure out why they felt like they couldn't use a condom, why, you know, they really felt afraid to do it. And so we really help them, again, to when they start to ask the right questions, start doing what we call sexual safety planning as well, with the appropriate BB service providers, to really help them to see that this is something that I can use all the time. It's not just I'm doing it for this program, for this little bit of money. So, and you want to know. So that's how we do that. And actually this year, hopefully will be the last year we'll do it in that model, because what we've been doing the last couple of years, testing out some different ways to do it, we want to create one kind of curriculum, and we use the word curriculum loosely, in that I don't believe, and our office doesn't believe, we can tell you as a community what's best for you. But what we can help do is provide you with a framework and approach that if you put these pieces in place, then you can build something that we know will work. We know it's evidence-based already there. You don't have to create new evidence. And you have the freedom to do a program that works, that's comfortable for you and for your community. Project Connect is a grant, and that actually was because that was that handwritten kind of note that we found out in, like, the last hour. So that's actually through the Family Violence Prevention Fund. But they did a competitive award process. And we work with them because we wanted to make sure that even though we went through them as our venue, it wasn't for the Family Violence Prevention Fund. It was for states. And the states were able to apply. We had about over 50 or 40. I'm getting a little confused right now, but it was like 40-some or 50-some, even as far as the islands, to apply for it. That was in January of this year. Training for healthcare professionals. That's actually a new project that we're working on. It has not been released yet. And we're looking at our first part for us, of course, in phase one of the government is figuring out what approach works. We don't need to create a new tool. There are lots of tools out there. But we want to package something up, get it nice and pretty, and then we can start to train healthcare providers. And we're modeled after our, we have, in our office, we also do cardiovascular disease, and we did a big initiative over the last, new pop quiz. What is one sign of a woman? What's one sign for a woman that she's having a heart attack? I'm loving you all. I mean, anytime you come back, I love this crowd. Because you all know so much. Most people don't know that. They still think it's the same. So that means our work is working. And so what we've done in that approach is go kind of state by state, looking at targeting certain types of providers that we know we'll see. And that's the same approach for healthcare professionals. We're going to target OBGYNs. We're going to target family practitioners. We're going to target docs, get in their faces very nicely, give them some nice little signals to help them really start thinking about balance, and not just for a one-time deal. So that's what happens now. Get them in the room, give them a CEU, ooh, we've done our job.
Going back to your curriculum, going back to what the Congresswoman said, a lot of times where there's a proposed curriculum, it works really well in Iowa, and then we're told in Los Angeles to apply it here, and we end up with a very difficult time explaining that we're massive. And that what works in even bigger places, you know, maybe even Chicago, don't work here. So those things that require specific curriculums or specific programs, often we're not given the opportunity to describe why it would work. Let me say it's not an open year about why it would work.
Well, how we at Offlink address that is usually, one, again, we either say evidence-based intervention or evidence-based strategy. But we also give you an opportunity to write your proposal of how you're going to adapt it. Now, some organizations don't do adaptations, but we do. And, you know, I think a lot more organizations, federal and HHS, are kind of coming around to understand. Not only does it not work in L.A., it doesn't work in Mississippi. It probably only works in Iowa in that one place it was tested. So, you know, it's not, I think every state, city, or county feels like it's so different here. It really is, because people are different everywhere. So the technique, or the one trick, I guess, if you want to think of it, I don't think of it that way, is talking about not just that you're going to use this curriculum, but how you're going to use it and how you're going to adapt it and make it fit your needs. You know, those things are allowed. I know sometimes when we see evidence-based, like, it has to be done, and some of them do say, do not change, cannot do anything differently, must have 7 sessions with 8 women at, you know, for 30 minutes.
Okay, it takes 30 minutes to get the conversation going.
Yeah.
Sometimes you need to keep meeting with them until they don't come. And that's when you know you made a difference.
And those are the type of things that you're able to write when you're funding. You're able to say, you know, we view the intervention similar to this, and we found that our women actually need, you know, 2 hours. They actually need sessions, you know, and then have that in your timeline. So if you show that it was well thought out, that you thought about it, that you wrote about it, it doesn't knock you out of the 20, at least as far as the offices I work for and even the other organizations that I still review for. Go for it.
You
I have 5 minutes, so we'll just
as you're setting up your application,
mm-hmm.
are you allowing funding in the budget for evaluation support?
Mm-hmm.
I'll be looking for it.
Oh, I should say this. We don't restrict that you can't do it. And most of, I mean, I would say, because we have a very strong emphasis on evaluation, and me personally, because I'm an epidemiologist by training. So for me, if you don't have an evaluation piece, that's not good. So we do a lot of work.
I find that it's often limited on how much you're allowed to use, like, professional services or outside consultants or anything like that. And so not having in-house expertise on evaluation,
right.
It's critical for
yeah.
us that we can
oh, yeah.
have an outside.
And I think you'll start to see, this is just my best estimate, a trend more about what you'll start seeing is limited on indirect costs, which means, and that just means the cost you don't have to explain.
Right.
I saw some more hands. I'm going to have to, they gave me a 5-minute warning like 2 minutes ago. So any other questions? Okay, I'm sorry.
The pilot
initiatives. Pilot initiatives are, and actually this program, I'm skipping over it. We did it, we ended it, and now we're putting it underneath a bigger program.
Great.
We're doing a Women of Faith advocacy training program. So we've done it in 3 sites now. We're actually kind of coming up with, again, a framework. And that'll probably be ready in about 2 years to roll out. But before that, we'll probably be looking for some places to test it out. And our other project that we're really, really excited about is we're calling it, it'll have a better name than some other form, but it's addressing the female teen pathways to violence. And what we recognize is that men and women, boys and girls, have different pathways that lead to this violence. If we can start addressing them at younger ages, and I can assume the government's not quite ready for this yet, but I'll give you my own personal things about it. Good touch, bad touch. You know,
yes.
People really fought against that. No, I don't want my kids to learn about, you know, good touches and bad touches and sexual molestation because it's going to ruin their innocence. But when we decided as a society, it was better for them to have a little bit of information about it so that they can then say, this is wrong. This is happening to me. Somebody's touched me inappropriately and we can get help and get those perpetrators out. The same has to be thought about with violence, is that we got to teach them a little bit about some things, you know, and really help them to show them here's what good, healthy relationships look like. Here's what good pictures of masculinity is. Femininity does not mean what society has taught young girls that it means. And start to really address those kind of issues, then we can hopefully see them, I see 30 seconds, I got you, see them make difference. And then, this is a good one. This is one that you should all write down really good. I mean, my website is at the end. It's every year, and it hasn't happened for next year yet, the Office of Women's Health submits solicits proposals for violence initiatives in the state. It's for anybody. They don't have pets. It's anywhere from $5,000 to maybe $20,000. I mean, it's not a lot of money, but it's definitely the time where you have a very short proposal. I think the proposals are 5 pages or less. Last year, I think, was Teen Daddy Violence. I'm not sure what the theme is going to be this year. Actually, that wasn't the theme last year. That was supposed to be. So Teen Dating Life could be the same this year. And I will make sure that Sally and Peace Over Violence have that information so when they're out, they call them waves of RFAs. They come out of different waves. And actually what you'll also see is that we do an HIV/AIDS wave, we do a violence wave, we do a cardiovascular wave, we do a Women's Health Week wave. All of those are opportunities when I talked earlier about thinking about how you connect what you do to health. And then if you're able to present an approach that's innovative, that integrates DV to overall women's wellness, oh, I have a great proposal to put this. Somebody will give me, you know, a couple $1,000 to do an event, to do a small, short program. So thinking outside the box. And that came out this year in February. So I'm assuming it'll be in February of 2011.
Yes, my
You said that your website was in the paper?
Yes. Let me see. I'm sorry. I'm
pulling. No, it's not. Your phone number is here.
Did it cut off?
I think it's the last one.
No, it's yellow.
It's in yellow.
Oh, we can't see it.
I'm sorry.
That's the problem.
But it's womenshealth.gov. Womenshealth.gov. Women, with an S.
I don't know why.
Health.gov.
No
question. No. And there's a nice tab, hopefully they haven't changed it, that says funding opportunities. Because our website is not something easy.
I have a really good question. I'm worried a lot, LA Unified, I'm charged health education and violence prevention. The money to the school is gone. Title IV is gone. The money that's coming out through this office is going to outside agencies, and then they want to work with the schools. Well, if there's no position within the school district to work with the agency, it's going to be a real big problem.
Right.
So I'm asking you, I know the pregnancy prevention money, we applied for lots of different agencies, and through lots of different agencies, they're going to fund positions at LA Unified, because if we don't have the funding, we can't be partnered. You're talking about this touch thing, good touch, bad touch, your example, that's an educational issue. So that's really an important thing. So if you could take any messages back, schools need to be funded for health education. We are not at all in LA Unified. $0 other than federal and state funding. There's no general fund dollars going to health education. Common across the United States. So I was just asking you to take that back. I'm a health
I have to take it back, and I have to tell you the conversations they had, needs to be had more, and this may be a good opportunity to do it, because really what you have to look at is Department of Education working with Health and Human Services to do that. Because
right.
The Office on Adolescent Health that has a teen pregnancy money, which is not our office, but there's a new office within HHS.
Right.
Which you said exactly right. People have applied, you know, have these positions, but you're right. We need to have announcements that say, just like the evaluation question that says, you must align or designate what funds will be provided to systems of education. Showing you what these things mean.
Yeah.
So, thank you very much. My contact information.